Broadcasting from the Co-Certified Studios in beautiful downtown Burbank, this is National Bugle Radio.
Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio Fabulous Filbert Financial Friday. Filbert, there really is a lot of financial stuff to talk about today, isn't there?
Yeah, things are hot.
We would be talking about this even if this wasn't our financial show. So, yeah. Massive stock market crash. Is this real? Is this manufactured? What's going on here?
Okay, well, the first thing to keep in mind is that markets do go down. They do sell off. They don't just go straight up vertically like ours has been for the past umpteen months.
Yeah, but with a little bit of a break in February. Yeah.
If you do have a 401k or anything, it's not a panic over. They started to sell off again today, then they went back up, and then they sold off again. The S&P index did. But
yeah, and you got to keep in mind, well, I don't know. I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me. I know the Dow fell by about 500 points a day, meaning Thursday, and maybe 1,000 points on Wednesday. And
yeah, I think it was about 800 on Wednesday.
800 on Wednesday. And so it's had these massive falls, but what is it? Early last week or 2 weeks ago or so, it was at an all-time high again and been pushing into all-time high territories. So, yeah, it's down, but it's down from an all-time high.
It's just starting to hit the resistance points. Like, if you look at a chart, the last time it met resistance, you know, at that level, it doesn't mean it's going to stop, but generally that's where it starts to slow down.
And there's a couple of disclaimers we make. We always make the disclaimer that we're not giving financial advice, that we're just two guys talking, right? And then the other disclaimer, and I think I need to make this disclaimer given the tone of what I'm likely to say for the rest of the show. The Federal Reserve over the past several decades has had an vastly disproportional Jewish influence in it. Until early this year, it had had a Jewish chairman, something like 38 out of the past 47 years.
Yeah.
If you assume
you have mentioned that.
Yeah, before. If you assume Paul Volcker is a goy, which I do, I think Paul Volcker was a goy. Some people say he was a Jew. And also that, you know, you have all of these financial institutions, such as Goldman Sachs, but that Wall Street has a disproportional Jewish influence in it. And when I see what, you know, Jewish-dominated organizations have done just to our sponsor, the Co-Certified app, just over the past week, if they're going to go after the Co-Certified app, is it beyond the pale to think that they might also try to go after Donald Trump via the stock market? It's not beyond the pale to think that. Does that mean it's necessarily happening? What do you think is? Do you think? What do you think's happening? Is this market stuff, or is this market stuff, or is this a big fellow white conspiracy?
Well, first, I want to know what happened to the Co-Certified app. What happened there?
Yeah, I have to be a little bit circumspect what I say about it, because I certainly don't want to say anything inaccurate, but there has been some. I read about it on air earlier today for the Thursday show, but a media watchdog group, you know, that looks at hate, and I had to reboot my computer in the meantime, so I don't have that up in front of me. But some media watchdog group that has also, it seems also to have disproportionate fellow white membership in its leadership. they went after the CoSertified app because, and they quoted from the CoSertified commercial where I'm the voice of it, you know, saying, "Did you know the kosher food industry is something that is, flies below the radar to most people," or whatever I say.
Yeah, it was a great ad.
Yeah. Well, so they criticized that ad as if it's something conspiratorial. And of course, you know, the ad, I don't know if that ad in particular, but, you know, we talk about it being, it's great for people. If you want to keep kosher, you don't want to eat non-kosher certified food. Hey. CoSertified app's great for you too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it is. But, they went after it because they have a problem with the Goyim knowing anything. There's nothing to see here, move on. And so most people who have downloaded the app have downloaded it to Android phones because there was always resistance from Apple to this app. And so I don't think very many people have the Apple version of it, but it may well get, smashed by Apple and turned into applesauce. I don't know. There may be some problems and people who have downloaded the app, the Apple version of the app, may have, Apple tried to disable it or something. I don't really know how these things work. And I don't have an iPhone, so I don't know exactly how it works. Of course, the app was either $1.95 or $2.95 or $2.99, whatever it is. It's less than $3. It depended on when you downloaded it. And anybody whose app is disabled by Apple will get free enrollment in the web-based version of the app when that is developed. Right now it's under development. But it's just, they're attacking CoSertified.
Well, that's just crazy.
It is just crazy.
It's stupid.
Can we be excused for thinking that sometimes conspiratorial type of actions take place even in the financial markets? But so one may very well think such a thing, but in this show, where we don't give financial advice, but we are two guys talking, the question becomes: okay, well, we could be excused for thinking that that's the case, but is it really the case? And so, what's this big movement this week, Philbert? Do you think that this is more likely to be a big fellow Huawei conspiracy, or is it kind of typical market stuff when when you're maybe due for a correction and interest rates are rising? Now, of course, why are interest rates going up? Because of the Fed. What's your take on it?
Yeah, well, yes and yes. I think it is just correction. Just the sell-off, it has gone up. If you look at the S&P 500 index, it's SPY, the call letters.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a fraction. I mean, even though, the talking heads get on there at Bloomberg and make a big deal about it, it's not that big a deal. If you were hedged, like any good trader would be, you'd be fine.
Well, so
They're raising interest rates, and I'm glad because they need to cut off some of the debt. They've inflated the debt bubble. They've reinflated the housing bubble. Now, I mean, the debt bubble, we've never seen it this big. This is not good. So, they need to raise interest rates so they can stop rolling over some of the debt each month. So, and they're starting to do that now. It's one reason why you're seeing, we saw a little bit of dollar buying. Today it actually sold off a lot, but
we have a caller, William from Montana, who's kind of my go-to guy on Russia. But a few weeks ago, he mentioned something about the indebtedness of fracking companies. And yeah. he's in Montana, and I know there's a huge fracking play. They call it a shale oil play in North Dakota. It very likely might stretch into eastern Montana as well.
Yeah, I believe it does.
Yeah, and he's saying that production falls off much more rapidly than they had expected, and that these places are like heavily indebted. And I've heard, I guess it was on, because I watch the Kramer's Mad Money, Jim Cramer's Mad Money. And I think he had mentioned it, or the other source of financial news I get is typically the business nightly business report, which is produced by CNBC for PBS. But it had been mentioned there that, you know, there's a great deal of indebtedness, and of course, as interest rates rise, it's going to be a lot harder for these firms to, roll over their debt. But so here's the thing: a market correction is defined as a reduction. What do you call it? A decline of 10% or more from recent highs. Now, the recent highs would have been those records that were set at around the end of September. And the Dow, I don't know exactly what it was. It was like 26,000 something. So you'd have to have a decline of 2,600 to from that recent high. I don't actually think we're quite there yet. But, you know, a correction is, you know, a correction's not the end of the world itself, and I'm not even sure if we're in correction mode.
No.
Now, many individual stocks might be in correction mode, but no doubt are.
Commodities aren't.
Yeah. So here's my take for the time being, because this, I mean, for all we know, we could look back on this 2 months later, we really could be in kind of financial Armageddon. You never know, but. So you have the Fed is tightening, and President Trump has said it's tightening too fast. Jim Cramer is saying, you know, and he's not necessarily a big Trump guy, but he's saying, actually, you know, what the president says is correct. The Fed's tightening too fast. And then he had some Jewish CEO of a financial firm on that he was talking to last night, and they were agreeing. Of course, they were also agreeing. See what happens? He should have kept on Janet Yellen. Instead, he goes to this Goy Powell, and, you know, Powell is just, he's not paying attention, and he's paranoid about inflation, and he's raising interest rates. Well, the point winds up becoming, I mean, their point was that he, you know, whether they meant it or not, but the way I read into it is, yeah, he should have stayed with the Jew. He should have stayed with the Jew, Janet Yellen. This is what happens when you go with the Goy. But the point for us is that since February, you've got Jerome Powell, who I know when he took over as Fed, I asked you, does it really make a difference? And you said, I asked, does it make a difference that you have a non-Jew, a Goy, at the head of the Fed? And your reply, which I remember, was, here comes the new boss, same as the old boss.
That's what you said. Beat the new boss, same as the old boss.
Right, that's what you said. So if he's, I mean, he had been working, he had been a governor at the Fed for many years under Janet Yellen, under Ben Bernanke as well. He's been at the Fed for a while. And so he would be socialized, and you would think he would be socialized into their way of thinking. But does it really? Is it so much? Here's one of the questions: is it so much the monetary policy pursued by the Fed that is particularly Jewish, or David Duke's view of it is not so much that it's the monetary policy, but it is the potential for insider information to get leaked through Jews at the Fed to Jews in Wall Street. And if that's the case, has that stopped? Because you look at the Board of Governors now, and I, as far as I know, I haven't taken a look at it for a couple of months probably, but I don't think there's a single Jew on the Board of Governors. So at the very top leaders, among the Fed presidents, the bank presidents, the 12 federal bank presidents, they're certainly Jews. Yeah. But I'm talking about the Board of Governors.
I mean, I don't even know if that matters. I mean, all the shareholders are Jewish.
It would be crazy
to think that the, like Dr. Duke said, the he who calls the tune pays the piper.
So the shareholders do elect, so the governors are selected by the president. The bank presidents, so you have the New York Fed, the Kansas City Fed, the Dallas Fed, and the Dallas Fed, I think, is a guy named Kaplan. The New York Fed, which is the most important, I believe still has this guy Dudley, who's not Jewish, and it's a very important one. But around the country, there are some of the Fed's banks, and there's these 12 banks, and some of them have Jews. And I haven't done a roll call recently, so I'm not sure how many are. But then, you know, the question becomes, okay, maybe the monetary policy itself isn't designed to favor, say, Jewish banking interest. But maybe it is, as Dr. Duke believes, that it is the insider information. And if it's the insider information, where is that information coming from? Is it coming from the Board of Governors, or is it coming from the permanent bureaucracy there, which also would be laden with Jews, one would assume, although I don't have a list of the, the personnel chart of the Federal Reserve. I don't have that, but one would assume there would be lots of Jews there. So those are the questions.
It's anti-Semitic to point out that, you know, Jews are largely in control of international finance and domestic finance in the United States. You know, you ask people that. I'm not going to say his name, but there's an online economist that's fairly well known. And I caught him on an online Q&A when there wasn't a whole lot of questions bombarding him, so he got to read everything on YouTube. And this was probably a month ago. And I asked him, I said, hey, what's your opinion on the overwhelming overrepresentation of Jews in international finance? And he says, if you go back to the Renaissance, you know, where nobody else was allowed to, lend loans or loan money for other money, you know, with mm-hmm. usury.
Mm-hmm.
And, that was his excuse. And I said, that's nonsense. What about Jewish nepotism?
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't reply to that, you know. Oy vey.
Right. Well, I remember when I was working in the financial markets one day, sitting at my desk, and 5 or 7 feet away from me is a guy at the next desk, and he was a young Jewish guy, and he was on the phone with one of his Jewish friends, and they were apparently discussing a third party. And my colleague, I heard him say, "Oh yeah, he's a Jewish soul brother, you know, he's a Jewish soul brother," and I didn't think too much of it at the time. But it wasn't like whispered or anything; it was just said out in the open. But
he's probably a very important rabbi in Israel too.
Well, I don't know, but you know, the point was that there was two Jews in the financial markets identifying a third party as a Jew. So read into that what you may. It wasn't such a big... that one incident's not such a big deal. But read into that as you may. Okay, we're coming up on the first break, but we'll be right back with more interesting stuff.
Thank you. Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anybody who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future. And we are back. Well, if you are listening to this on YouTube, or, yeah, I guess it would be on YouTube, you probably just heard the Koshertified commercial. If you're listening to this on RBN's archives, or if you're listening to it live, the commercial, I think, comes on the last break. But, yeah, so that commercial was just filled with hate. But let's get back to talking about the Jewish financial conspiracy at the Federal Reserve. So my take on this is that what's going on right now is it's kind of market correction type of stuff, but the rising interest rates, which are led by the Federal Reserve, are the proximate cause of it. But of course, one could very easily say that what we have in the stock market right now is a bubble. Maybe it is kind of a bubble, although the economy's been strong, so it's not necessarily a bubble, but, you know, because you have had, I mean, you've got lower unemployment numbers than any time since, I believe, 1969, so in by many measures, the economy is humming along, and so rising stock prices, you know, we're in a trade war, but we seem to be winning the trade war. So you could make the case for a bubble, and you could make the case for not a bubble. You know, some people might say, okay, they're trying to crash the economy, crash the market ahead of the 2018 election, you know, the midterm elections, and maybe there is a little bit of that, but I think that probably this is more of a market thing, and I think that while there are some people who would like to manipulate the market, there's no doubt that there are people who want to manipulate the market for their political purposes. There's no doubt. But that there's, I think at this point, there's probably a lot more people who will be interested in swooping in and buying shares at a lower value, at a lower cost, and it'll provide a floor to the market, and it'll stabilize. I think there's more of that right now. I think actually the markets is to a large extent kind of a tug of war, but it's not necessarily only between economic forces. There are political forces there as well, yeah. And sometimes they get the upper hand. Yeah,
good analogy.
Now you mentioned before the show about the dollar. What's going on in the currency market?
Well, it had a good day yesterday, which was Wednesday.
Now you had a good day, or who had
the
a good
dollar?
Day?
Yeah, I had a good day. So I was riding it up and down.
Vis-a-vis what currencies?
Mostly the euro, because the spread's pretty low. And with the Italian debt crisis, the euro's been pretty volatile too. So there's a ton of volatility in the euro-dollar pair.
So what?
And the euro-pound.
The euro-pound. So for the euro-dollar, what's it at right now?
1/16.
1/16. So it takes $1.16 to purchase 1 euro.
Yes.
What's the dollar yen? Do you have that in front of you?
1.1234.
So that shows a little bit of dollar weakening, because it had, you know, a couple of months ago it was like 1.06, and then it's been pretty stable around 1.11, so a certain amount of weakening.
Well, it's funny you asked that. Those are actually the two pairs that I have trades open on.
Okay, and which way are you betting?
Against the dollar, both ways.
You're okay, betting against the dollar, and doing okay today, eh?
Yeah, I'm about breaking even. It's you know, it's later in the evening here on Thursday, and when the European markets open here in a few hours, it'll start booming.
Okay. Well, just to wrap up about the Federal Reserve. They are the proximate cause of this. Everybody is talking about rising interest rates. You know, having been involved in the financial markets, decades ago, but there was always some sort of narrative, and there might not really be any fundamental change, but all of a sudden, instead of, you know, talking about one thing, instead of talking about trade, then the next day they start focusing on interest rates, which tell them to do something opposite. You know, maybe the trade is saying, you know, buy, 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 and the interest rates are saying sell, sell, sell. And the difference is just in the market psychology, what the market is focusing on. And there may be little or even nothing that's changed regarding interest rates or regarding trade. You know, or regarding technicals, you know, the technicals, the chart stuff. But just all of a sudden, the focus is going to shift. Or, you know, political instability. But all of a sudden, the focus shifts, and it can be for little or no reason. But all of a sudden, it's the focus shifts. And now the focus has shifted towards, you know, it had been on trade for a while. And when it was on trade, and you had America seemingly winning its trade war against China, and then renegotiating NAFTA, and the Canadians capitulating, that all seemed good for a while. But then all of a sudden now it's on interest rates. And I don't think there's really been that big of a change in the outlook for interest rates, because it was always, 3 or 4 quarter of a percent interest rate hikes for this year. That was always the outlook, and it's been...
And you got to keep in mind with their activity in the bond market as well. That's their big influence.
There. Yeah, so let's talk about that. We got to go to the break, but we'll talk about that right after the break.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anybody who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Welcome back. Welcome back. So, the bond market, that is where the Federal Reserve has really the most direct influence, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. That, I mean, that's what you need to follow. If there's one thing that you need to follow, it's not gold or silver or oil or any commodity. It's the bond market.
Yeah, bond market. Again, in a broader sense, you know, sometimes you talk about the money market, which is basically just shorter-term bonds and, you know, related instruments. But that's where the Federal Reserve is operating on a daily basis, buying and selling, you know, soaking up liquidity, supplying liquidity, and it's not at all clear what they're doing. This was one of the things about, you know, Ron Paul was all in to end the Fed, and then he, because he wasn't going to get anywhere in Congress with end the Fed, he started doing audit the Fed. But I remember in 2008 when the TARP was passed, and that was legislation to purchase troubled assets. It was a troubled asset relief program. And so the government, using $750 billion, you know, $750 billion, but $750 billion that were appropriated by Congress could go in and purchase these, you know, mortgage and mortgage-backed derivatives. And there was a big public outcry about it. The reason there was a big public outcry about it was there was a certain amount of transparency and people could see what was going on and they didn't like it. And so there was a shift then. And so they started being very careful about the troubled, you know, the TARP, the Troubled Asset Relief Program, and making sure that they were able to show that these were being paid back. Well, why were they being paid back? Because the Federal Reserve opened these what they called windows, these you know, windows for trillions of dollars of facilities whereby banks could borrow from the Federal Reserve at 0% interest rate and then pay back these TARP funds.
Yeah.
And there was no transparency there. There was no transparency. And of course, I mentioned the briefly earlier in the show, the Open Market Committee, I think I did. And that's a committee that's made up of the governors appointed to the Federal Reserve Board by the president, but also five of the 12 Federal Reserve Bank presidents, including always the New York Fed president, and then four out of the remaining 11 bank presidents, they rotate in and out of this committee. But this committee decides on the you know, the day-to-day market operations of the Federal Reserve, where it's going in and buying bonds and buying short-term paper and whatnot, buying and selling, and it has a great impact, and it's done through the New York Fed. But like I say, here's the thing. The New York Fed currently, and for the past several years, has been under this guy Dudley. I forget his first name. And from what I can tell, he's a goy. And before him, it was Timothy Geithner. And a lot of people say Timothy Geithner's Jewish, but my research shows he's not. But of course, he worked for Henry Kissinger. You know, he's the Council on Foreign Relations. So he certainly works for the tribe if he's not a member of the tribe. But and this guy Dudley may very well be the same, just like, you know, you were saying, meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
Uh-huh.
But the fact of the matter is that at least nominally, the people who are on top of the Fed right now, the people running policy, are not. I mean, the governors, I don't think there's a Jew on the Board of Governors. I'll check during the next break. And the New York Fed's not run by a Jew. So, you know, it may not really matter that the people who are actually carrying out policy aren't Jews. Maybe it doesn't really matter, and some of our listeners are going to say absolutely it doesn't matter. But
well, I mean, the shareholders are all Jewish.
The shareholders are right, and the shareholders, but the shareholders decide some of these people who make the day-to-day decisions.
Yeah, it may be a PR stunt. Who knows? But I mean, anybody should know that they're pulling the strings for sure.
Yeah, pulling the strings, but you know, you pull a string and you don't necessarily get an immediate result from it, right? And
it's true, and sometimes the string is weak.
Yeah, and the reason I'm bringing all this up is because, you know, we want to be as accurate as possible. We want to have as accurate information as possible, and we're trying to, well, anybody who's involved in markets or investments wants to have as accurate an idea as possible of what to expect in the future, right? That's what it's all about, is, you know, forecasting the future. Knowing the past means nothing for the markets unless it helps you read the future. But even if you're not involved in markets, if you're interested in politics, you're interested in elections, you're interested in these things, you want to be as accurate as possible. And so that's, I'm trying to be accurate. And you know, I had my disclaimer at the beginning, which is like, well, whatever it was, you can go back to the beginning of the show and hear what I don't want to sound like I'm completely discounting the idea that you can have, you know, Jewish nepotism and Jewish, dare I say, even conspiracy in finance. Obviously, you can, but there's a lot of other stuff that goes on too, and you know, we want to be able to know when the phenomena that we're seeing is a result, you know, is the phenomenon in front of us. The phenomenon in front of us, is this a result of Jewish machinations, or is it a result of something else, or is it, you know, result of a variety of factors, one of which might be this type of Jewish nepotism. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Okay. Well, actually, I've gone and I paused for a second. I've pulled up the list of people on the Fed Open Market Committee. Now, this meets four times a year, but it does set monetary policy. They are the people who decide on those, you know, 25 basis point rate hikes that we've been seeing for the past year and a half or so. And like I said, the members are the seven members of the Board of Governors, plus it's supposed to be five of the 12 Federal Reserve Board bank, you know, the regional bank presidents, including always the New York governor. Now, I was saying the New York governor was Dudley. Dudley actually resigned, or he left in June, and he's been succeeded by John C. Williams. So John C. Williams sounds like a goy to me, and he looks like a goy to me. Well, first of all, let's break this down. So the seven members of, there are seven seats on the Federal Reserve Board, and those are appointed by the president. And currently, three seats are vacant. And it has been the situation for the past, you know, 12 years or for quite some time that you've had these vacant seats. And I don't know why, but one would think that the fewer seats that are being occupied, A, it would probably mean more authority, more power to these bank presidents. And the bank presidents are not appointed by the president, the U.S. president. The bank presidents are appointed by the shareholders. And I'd like to say we know who they are. We don't actually know who they are. That's kind of a closely guarded secret exactly who they are, but there's been enough information over the years that we have a pretty good idea.
Rothschilds and the Moses Seif family.
Yeah. So
that's just speculation, though.
Yeah, and also so you would have, you know, on that open market committee, it would throw the balance of power. If you only have four governors, that means those five bank presidents have a majority vote. Whereas if, you know, a majority of the vote. Whereas if you had all seven governors present on that open market committee, they would be the majority and not these bank presidents who are appointed, hired by the shareholders. But also within the Federal Reserve Board itself, the fewer people who are appointed as governors, it means the fewer people who are supervising the permanent bureaucracy of the Federal Reserve. Oy vey. Now, so Powell has been on the Federal Reserve Board since 2012, and he was appointed as the chairman of the board by Trump in 2018. Now, the other members, there's a new member, Richard Clarida, who's just was appointed vice chairman, and he is, you know, the previous vice chairman had been Stanley Fisher, who had been the, before he joined the Fed, was the president of the Bank of Israel. He's, you know, he's an Israeli. And there had been a lot of push for him to become the chairman of the Fed. There had been that, but he had left. I think sometime last year, or that had been vacant for a while. But as far as I can tell, Clarida is not Jewish. Then last year, October 13th, you had Randall Quarles who was appointed, and he's also by Trump, and he's also a goy. And then you had this holdover. Her name is Lael Brainard, and she was appointed in 2014 by Obama. And I've, you know, checked and checked and checked. She's a blonde lady, and as far as I can tell, she's not Jewish. So the only four members of the Board of Governors are not Jewish, and that is in marked contrast to early Obama administration. So before Powell, you had, let's see, Powell, he came in 2012 and replaced Frederick Mishkin, sounds pretty Jewish to me, I believe he was.
Russian,
yeah, Jewish-Russian, I mean, Jewish from Russia. And of course, if you go back to 2012, at that point, Janet Yellen was the vice chair, and Ben Bernanke was the chair, and you also, maybe 2012 or 2011, or during the early Obama years, you had this woman, something, Raskin. Her husband, I believe, is named Jamie Raskin, or maybe her name was Jamie Raskin. Her husband is now, who's Jewish and wears a yarmulke, is a member of the House of Representatives from Maryland, and was one of these people who had objected to electoral votes being cast for Donald Trump when the House of Representatives was counting the votes. It was around that time, early in the Obama administration, where there might have been a couple vacant seats, but the four or five seats that were filled were all Jews. There was a period of time like that. But now the Board of Governors is all goys, as far as I can tell.
It's awfully nice if you're a radio or a talkhead pundit on CNN or, you know, one of these Jewish-owned networks, and you can go on there and say, look at all the management, you know, none of them are Jewish, you know. Mm-hmm. It must be awfully nice to be able to say that, you know.
Well, but I've never heard anybody... Well, I haven't heard anybody say that, but they would say that, you know, because it's been a talking point.
I think Wolf Blitzer kind of, he wasn't talking about the Fed specifically, but during David Duke's interview with Wolf Blitzer a long, long time ago, he was going that route with him.
Mm-hmm. Now, you look at the...
It's like, oh, the Pope isn't Jewish. Look at...
Well, now you look at the other members, the other current members of the Federal Open Market Committee. You have the, you have the chairman of, or the president of the New York Fed, John Williams, who, as far as I can tell, is non-Jewish. Then you have, you know, on this one of these one-year terms, you've got Thomas I. Barkin, who I think is Jewish, and he's the Richmond head, the head of Richmond. You have Raphael W. Bostic from Atlanta, the Atlanta Fed president. And I'm not sure. Bostic, though, to me sounds like it could be. Loretta J. Mester from Cleveland. Again, I don't know. I haven't checked these people very carefully. I'm not sure if she doesn't actually look Jewish to me, but she could be. But I don't have, I don't really have any evidence that she is. But these people, these bank presidents, like said several times, they are hired by the shareholders. They are hired by the banks in the region. They are not appointed by the president. But here's the thing. You know, we are seeing on the Supreme Court and also the other lower federal courts, Donald Trump has been appointing a bunch of people. Now, he's appointed two goys to the Supreme Court, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's appointed some Jews to the other federal courts. But I would think, and this would be a good project for anybody listening out there to look into this, but I think that he is de-Jewifying the judiciary.
And I certainly hope so.
And I hope so, too. I'm, you know, I could be wrong, but, you know, the, certainly the high-profile guys like Kavanaugh and Gorsuch, they're goys. And I think it's probably happening at the lower federal courts as well, and there's a lot of resistance, and I think there's a congressional heel dragging on some of these other nominations as well, and the same thing may well be going on in the Fed, that you know, beneath the radar, Trump may be, and I hope so. It seems like, at least on the surface, it seems that he is reducing the hebrosity of the Federal Reserve. Well, only time will tell, but
he needs to get that old Kushner rat out of there.
He's got to get Kushner out of there for sure. But at any rate, in terms of this week, he's been very critical of Powell, and you know, the Federal Reserve is raising rates probably faster than they need to, but certainly they're not doing Donald Trump's bidding. Okay, well, we're going to the break. We'll be back. Welcome back to the show. Well, you know, a lot of our shows recently have been less financial and more on other current events. But, of course, what's going on in the markets this week is big news. And so I think it's important for us to address it. It's our responsibility to our listeners. But we have a few minutes left, and you're a musician, and I'm a musician too. I like music. And you have a song for us this week?
Yes, I do. Something new I've been working on.
Okay. And what instruments are we going to hear on it?
Well, there's a keyboard, an acoustic guitar, an electric guitar, and some ambient style percussion.
What are you playing? What are you playing?
I did the guitar, and I mixed it, did all the production work, and I helped record it.
Who played the drums or the percussion?
Those are sampled.
Okay. All right. Well, that sounds like fun. Let's hear it. And thanks, Philbert.
Yeah, great to be here. Hope everybody has a good weekend.
And I'll be back again next week with more exciting episodes of National Bugle Radio.